I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania became a real battleground state on Election Day, giving Donald Trump the win, the first time a Republican bested a Democrat in the Commonwealth in many years. One of Trump's key voting blocks were white women, getting 53% of their vote. You'll be meeting three of them this morning on Radio Times. But first, Keystone Crossroads talked to Trump supporters in Pennsylvania for their occasional series, I Voted Trump. Eleanor Klibanoff reports.
Matt Pacifico isn't typical mayor material. He's young and hip, wears an earring, and has a stormtrooper helmet behind his desk. When Pacifico first ran for mayor of Altoona 4 years ago, he'd never held elected office, though he did have experience running a successful family business. Trump's campaign asked Pacifico to speak at the August rally Trump held in Altoona.
Yeah, it was probably one of the coolest experiences ever. You know, I mean, I was so nervous to speak in front of that many people. And when I came out and, you know, said something in my opening line, and the crowd started to, you know, get into it, and then, like, all the nerves just went away.
Pacifico sees his vote from two perspectives, as a citizen and as a mayor responsible for one of Pennsylvania's many distressed cities. He says the biggest issue for Altoona voters is bringing back jobs, so that's the biggest issue for him as well.
They're all very hopeful that Trump will be able to follow through on what he said about bringing jobs back into the communities where, you know, the industries were here at one time and then, you know, left.
Communities like Shamokin in what used to be Pennsylvania coal country. Today, it's a rundown little town with 7,000 residents, a quarter of whom live under the federal poverty line.
Okay, come on up. Let them know.
Jim Bowers runs God's Chuck Wagon, a mobile soup kitchen in Shamokin and the surrounding towns. He voted for Trump for the same reason Pacifico did.
I just want jobs. I just want to be able to look out there and say, these people I don't need to feed no more. These people can make it on their own.
God's Chuck Wagon served over 22,000 people in 2015, according to their website. And Bauer says that number is always growing. He wants a president who cares about coal country. And he thinks that'll be Donald Trump. A little further north in Schuylkill County, Jessica Turpak agrees.
Me and my husband have a small oil company called Turpak Oil.
The past 8 years have been hard for these small business owners.
Obamacare, to me, is my number one priority, getting rid of it. Obamacare, if it continues in this household and something happens, we could really lose everything we worked for.
She's hopeful that Trump will repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. But beyond politics, Turpak also just likes Trump. She dressed her toddler, Hunter, to look like the candidate, and Trump brought him on stage during a rally in Wilkes-Barre. She says she gets him.
I tend to say what I think. I can relate to him in that aspect, that he says what he thinks.
Plain talk also appealed to Seth Coffer, a gastroenterologist and Republican ward leader in Philadelphia.
The fact that we had an outsider who is speaking plain English at a level where all voters can understand, all that excitement is exactly what our party needed.
Coffer is gay and lives in bright blue Philadelphia, but he served as a Trump delegate at the Republican National Convention. He felt Trump was unfairly depicted as divisive during the election.
That is not the message that I hear from Mr. Trump, and that's not what I feel among the delegates from all over the country. I heard them standing, applauding, cheering for inclusive policies.
Coffer's fellow ward leader, Daphne Goggins, says as a black woman, she had no issue with voting for Donald Trump.
I've never seen anything less racist than the Republican Party. Yeah, a lot of them are white, but some of them are black also. We are a big tent party.
Goggins is a community activist and recovering drug addict. She's a mother, a grandmother, and a lifelong Republican. Goggins campaigned for Trump because she thinks he's the country's best chance to defeat ISIS, stop illegal immigration, and bring back jobs. If Trump is successful, Goggins thinks he could be the catalyst to bring more black voters from inner-city Philadelphia over to the Republican Party. Trump had an easier sell in central Pennsylvania, where many counties have voted Republican for decades. In Altoona on election night, Ben Hornberger, a 23-year-old former Marine, was ready to let loose and celebrate the victory.
It's been a long, long stretch. I've been working since April with the campaign. I've been doing this for a long time, and it's so good right now.
Hornberger campaigned for Obama in 2012, but by 2016, he was one of the Trump campaign's most committed volunteers. He took time off from work to attend rallies around the state and put in long hours at campaign headquarters. But by Christmas, the election night high had tempered.
I don't expect him to be able to fulfill all of his campaign promises in 4 years. 4 years is not a long time with Congress and Senate.
Hornberger works at a DSL call center, making $20,000 a year. He's hoping to go to college so he can one day follow in the footsteps of Trump and run for office himself. Pittsburgh resident Penny Stenger also voted for Obama in 2012, but backed Bernie Sanders during the primary. When he lost, she turned to Trump.
I thought, Lord, what am I doing here? Why am I voting for Mr. Trump? And I thought, oh, right to life. It really is about that. He will have a chance to nominate and put in 3 or 4 judges, and then it will overturn what should be overturned.
But by early January, things had changed.
You know, I talked about voting for him because of pro-life. And then I realized after the election, he's not pro-life. If I were to do it again, it would be Hillary. It would have to be.
Up north in Erie County, Trump voters Phil and Marianne Spotts slowly came around to Donald Trump during the primaries. But now they're all in, so much so that they're taking a bus to D.C. for the inauguration and bringing their granddaughter with them.
I think it'll be a good experience for Allie that she'll remember this the rest of her life. And we've never experienced the inauguration.
17-year-old Allie Skinner couldn't vote, but was a Trump supporter and stayed up until 4 a.m. watching election returns.
It would just mean the world to me to get to go and support Trump as the peaceful transfer of power comes, just to be a part of the American system and see that this is how our government works, and it's really, truly amazing.
This week, Donald Trump will be sworn into office, and the 3 million Pennsylvanians who helped put him there, including a stormtrooper mayor, a mobile soup kitchen operator, a Philly ward leader, an ex-Marine, and a Bernie Sanders supporter with cold feet, will be watching to see what comes next. Eleanor Klibanoff, Keystone Crossroads.
And this is the first in an occasional Keystone Crossroads series. I voted Trump, checking with Trump supporters throughout his presidency. Keystone Crossroads reporters Emily Previty, Margaret Krause, Jessica Kirkunis, and Lindsay Lazarski contributed to the story. And Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. And joining us is Jessica Terpak, featured in this story. But first, here's a clip from that Trump rally featuring her little boy, Hunter.
Now, he's supposed to look like Donald Trump, but he's actually much too good looking. You are really handsome. Are you having a good time tonight?
Night.
Where's your daddy and your mommy, right? Do you want to go back? Do you want to go back to them, or do you want to stay with Donald Trump?
Trump.
Jessica Terpak, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So does your little boy still think he's Donald Trump?
He does. He does. In fact, we were in the grocery store the other day when an older man and woman were admiring him and asked him what his name was. And his response was Donald Trump.
And does he have the blonde hair to match the name?
He does. He does.
Well, clearly your son is a Donald Trump supporter. Tell us how you became a Donald Trump supporter, because I understand in the beginning you were undecided or unclear who you might vote for.
I was. And, you know, it really took some time. Like I said, I admire Donald Trump, his demeanor, the way he talks, the way he puts things out there, his honesty. Obamacare was definitely the drive behind voting for Donald Trump, definitely.
In fact, we heard in that piece that your premiums were going up. And what do you want either Donald Trump or the Republican Party to replace your health insurance with?
You know, something affordable with better care. Obamacare to me, for my family and any other family that I had been able to talk to throughout this process, it claimed to be more affordable. However, it wasn't. And the lack of care and the things that we were able to get done were few and far between. So it claimed to be more affordable, but it wasn't.
So that's
wasn't by any means.
And that's what you'll be looking for, affordable health care that gives you the kind of coverage that you need?
Yeah, I mean, for me and for everybody else, you know, everybody has a story as far as, you know, talking to people one-on-one, seeing people post things on social media as far as, you know, how their lives changed or how they didn't realize, you know, maybe even prior to the election, the effects of health care until now, until it was a little bit too late. So, yeah, definitely. I want it for myself, but I want it for everybody else, too.
You mentioned the fact that you like the way that Donald Trump talked, and this is obviously speaking as a candidate. Do you think a president should speak like that?
You know, at 33 years old, I found out in life that, you know, I want to be able to relate to somebody, and I want to be able to have a president where I felt for many years that politicians got up, they talked, they said what, you know, we wanted to hear, and that was it. And you never really found out who they were, what they were about, because it was what we wanted to hear. It was the tone we wanted to hear. It was what we wanted to hear get done. So now I find when Donald Trump came out and he speaks in such a way that people might find offending to them or uncensored, I kind of find it refreshing because, I mean, what you see is what you get. You know, there's nothing behind those closed doors. That's him, you know. So that's the part where I say we're all human. I'd rather somebody say things in front of millions of people and kind of some of those people go, ooh, that wasn't good, instead of turning around and saying it behind closed doors. Or like I said, never really knowing who the politicians are, what they're really like. I think with Donald Trump, we know what he's about. And, you know, what you see is what you get with him. He's not hiding anything.
Well, indeed. Jessica, I'm thinking about, and we're almost, excuse me, out of time here, but even his comments about Senator John McCain being a POW, were you comfortable with that?
You know, like I said, there's certain things that I kind of, oh, when he said it, it was like, oh, ow, you know. However, there's a lot of things that I would hope people would hold against me for saying, and things that I believe we all said in times of pressure or hurt or, you know, just anger. And, you know, I don't hold it against them. However, I don't condone it either. So, you know, no, definitely not.
Well, Jessica, I appreciate you joining us today in Radio Times, and it sounds like Keystone Crossroads will be checking in with you over the next couple of years, and I look forward to hearing their reports and what you have to say. Thanks for joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's Jessica. Bye-bye. That's Jessica Terpak, and we've got two more Trump supporters waiting in the wings as we carry on our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499, and we want to hear from you if you voted for Donald Trump. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. On Friday, Donald Trump will be sworn in as president, and one of the states that took him over the top was Pennsylvania, and one of his key voting blocks were white women. 53% of them voted for him, including our two guests, and let me introduce them to you. Carolyn Bunkowski is a Trump supporter, was a Republican delegate at the GOP convention from the 17th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. And Carolyn, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. I'm glad to be here.
Also with us is Lynette Villano, a Republican delegate to the GOP convention, also from the 17th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. And Lynette Villano, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you both here. Are you neighbors? It's so interesting that you're both from the 17th Congressional District. Lynette?
No, actually, we are on Republican State Committee together. So that's how we know each other.
Well, let me start with you, Lynette. Tell us why you voted for Donald Trump, and what do you hope he will accomplish as president? What do you hope his main accomplishment will be?
Oh, wow.
So I know many. It's a big one, but let's start there.
Yeah, yes, I know. Okay, I voted for Donald Trump because from the day he announced that he was running for president, I was excited about his candidacy. Like a lot of Americans, I was tired of what was going on in Washington. I wanted to see change. I liked his message about making America great again. And that just has so many different, you know, things to it. Jobs, education, national security, they're all big things. The health care, which seems to be something that he's going to address right away. They're all important. And I'm just going to take the attitude of let's wait and see. And hopefully, you know, he's surrounded himself with great people. And having the House and the Senate, I'm hoping that's going to contribute to getting something done for a change.
Lynette, I'll get back to you since you put a lot of big issues on the table. No problem there. No. That's why you're here. Carolyn, let me get you in on the conversation. What do you hope Donald Trump will accomplish as president?
Well, I agree with what Lynette says. She and I are both of like mind. We are on state committee together, and our 17th congressional district encompasses six counties, and we live in different counties. So we don't really see each other too much. But as far as what I want him to accomplish, well, I heard Donald Trump lay out the problems facing America, and they were just as I see them. And he pledged to correct the problems that he laid out and change the direction that the present administration is taking its citizens, and also to lift the unnecessary burdens that have wrongfully been placed upon us. I see it has been crippling, you know, businesses, and also he's willing and confident to do what is necessary to achieve these goals. So I really feel that he is a great patriot with great common sense. So I have all the confidence in the world that he's going to be achieve the things that he's laid out. And if you go on his website and he has laid out all his different programs, you can read in detail just exactly what he plans to do.
Well, let's talk a bit about jobs, because that was clearly one of the things that he campaigned on, and his voters, I'm assuming the two of you, Carolyn and Lynette, also voted for him for. If I can go back to you, Carolyn, and then to you, Lynette, in terms of jobs, what kinds of jobs, what are you looking for when it comes to either the creation of new jobs or keeping jobs in this country? Carolyn?
Well, I think he's going to do both of those things. The creation of new jobs, of course, is very important, and that's where lifting of so many of these false regulations coming in through gotchas and too many taxes and things that are driving businesses away. As we've seen, he's already created many, many jobs, including paid protesters who plan to be at the inauguration and were also at the convention. But put that aside, he has employed many, many great women to manage his vast holdings. If you look at his history of what he's done with his own businesses, he has women who are in charge of building buildings, senior accountants, legal counsel, and the list goes on. And myself personally, I am a Medicare insurance agent specialist, an independent broker. And with that, I can see a lot of different things that have been put in place that, you know, that are costing people more money. And in addition to that, I was an under 65 insurance agent for health insurance. And I lost 100% of my clientele to Obamacare. They went in two directions. They either was so expensive that they couldn't afford the premiums, and some of them that did take the premiums dropped their plans because the deductibles were so high it didn't get them anywhere, and they were paying the penalty instead. And the other half of my clients that I've lost became eligible for welfare. We call it welfare. That's what those they get the extra help depending on where they fall financially. And so then, therefore, I lost 100% of my business. Mm. And I can see that in so many businesses across the state. And I live here in coal country, and I see what's happening to coal. And people don't realize that the coal that generates the electricity that we use. So it's a vicious cycle.
Let me get you in on the conversation, Lynette, and I'll just add something to it. His selection, Donald Trump's selection for Labor Secretary, is a guy named Andrew Puzder, and owns a couple of restaurant chains. He's opposed to overtime rules, to paid sick leave, to paid family leave. And even during one of the debates, Donald Trump says he opposes the minimum wage. How do you see that when it comes to bringing jobs back? How do you square both what Donald Trump has said and also who he has selected as Labor Secretary with what you think the country needs?
Well, did he have his hearing yet? Because I don't remember seeing that one. Donald Trump said he wanted the people he was appointing to speak freely about what they believe.
Right.
But I think when it comes down to it, they will follow the vision that Donald Trump has for the country.
So whatever you feel, even though we've heard this from a number of nominees saying very different things from President-elect Donald Trump, you feel like when the bottom line comes, they will go with what the president says, Lynette?
Well, I would think so, and I think I certainly talked to these people before he, recommended them. So I'm sure they would work together to achieve the vision that Donald Trump has. And more importantly, the jobs for our younger people, especially the kids that are going to college and they have these high debt and these bills to pay and they can't get jobs. And so anything, it starts with jobs, because if you have a job, then maybe you could buy a house, take care of your family, so, get health care. So I think maybe that is like one of the number one issues.
One of the things that Donald Trump talked about on the campaign trail was, quote unquote, draining the swamp, the idea of bringing in fresh voices, new ideas, new people, people who are not familiar to Washington, D.C. And I wonder, Lynette, how you feel about the fact that there are six people from Goldman Sachs tapped to be part of the administration. A number of people are clearly part of Washington, D.C. I don't know if you consider that the swamp or not, but there have been some questions raised about just how much draining is going to be going on.
Well, when he talked about the first time I heard the term drain the swamp, I think we interpreted that as more to the elected officials that we keep sending to Washington and nothing is getting done. A lot of these people have proven themselves in their own life. They're all successful people. Many of them are not there to make money because they don't need it. They've mm-hmm. already made their money. And to have somebody like that running different programs, I think it's refreshing to have someone that's been a proven leader.
Do you think, Caroline, that Donald Trump should release his tax returns?
I gave that great consideration. And what I have come in my conclusion, which is just my opinion, that if he releases his tax returns and people can see, exactly where his businesses are, who he associates with, what country he is in, and looking at the barrage of protests that are going on, the people that are being paid to do damage, I'm afraid that if he does, there will be great damage done to his financial status and that he could possibly be, become brought down financially. So I think there's danger here that we have never seen in the history of the United States. We would like to see his tax returns. I would love to see what stocks he has in,
sure,
what bonds he has. But I can see that making havoc happening to, you've seen the stock market go crazy and gold prices. And I'm afraid if we all could see where his investments are, I'm afraid that could be a global problem. And I could be wrong.
Well, there is a question about putting them in a truly blind trust so that they would be protected, in a sense, the country would be protected to make sure that there weren't business dealings that would benefit the Trump family over the country.
That's not the point I was making. The point I was making is that if it became public to the world, then people would want to be buying the same stocks that he's buying because they are the ones that made him rich, or dumping stocks that aren't doing well. And I'm afraid it would be a very disadvantage to the global economy in that effect because he has so many holdings. That's where I'm coming from, exposing that to everyone.
You mentioned something earlier, Caroline, about people being paid to do damage. I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Well, we have seen ads on the Internet, and they've been reposted on Facebook. People were paid $15 an hour to go to the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia and just clap and to be there and to make a lot of hoopla. And now with the inauguration, we see that there are offers from $1,500 to $2,500 to go for the day to make great damage, to disrupt the inauguration, to actually hurt the people that are attending.
You so, mean hurt? Mean physically hurt? Attack yes. people who are at the inauguration?
Yes. Yes.
You think
yes,
that's going to?
You think
that's actually going to happen? People are going to get beaten up going to a Donald Trump inauguration?
Well, there was one report where they found a plot to put acid into the air conditioning system of the deplorable inaugural ball, and another one where they were going to set off all the fire alarms at one time, hoping that people would run and trample each other. You know, that type of thing.
I'm curious where you're reading this.
Actually, there's a YouTube video where it is undercover that they actually have a mic and a video of the people talking about exactly what they were going to do. And this has now been turned over to the FBI, so you can always check too with them. These are the types of things, but American people are not going to stop living and stop going to do things. But I do think we do have to be aware of our surroundings, you know, and if we hear a loud crash, we're not going to trample each other, you know, that type of thing.
Sure.
But, it's, you know, I just feel, though, that Donald Trump has been very, he's going to stick to our Constitution. And you asked Lynette about, you know, the people that, are they going to drain the swamp? It's hard to say, because what they're going to do is they're going to stick to the Constitution. And there's a lot in there that can be written in different ways. But I grew up having, you know, vacation leave when I worked a 40-hour job and having sick leave and that type of thing. And I would think that those types of standards and traditional values would stay within, you know, the country.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Carol Bunkowski. Also with us, Lynette Villano. And they were both Trump delegates at the Republican National Convention talking about what they hope and expect from a Trump administration. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Sorry, I got myself confused there. An email from Todd in Vineland. Great topic. I voted for Trump because of health care. You cannot shop on the ACA exchange if your job carries health insurance. And he goes on from there. Tweet from Marge. Make America great again. When was that in their minds? When was America great for everybody? An email from Richard. How do Trump voters justify voting for someone who dredged up every racist, xenophobic, and sexist sentiment among voters? Let me put that to you, Lynette Villano, and I was reading a new poll from NBC and the Wall Street Journal. Nearly 70% of Americans are saying to Trump, give up Twitter. And Twitter, as we know, is a place where he likes to criticize and sometimes insult people. What do you think we should, or what do you think he should do to, or should he rein in his incendiary comments?
Well, for 18 months, I listened to people saying he should do this, he should do that, he shouldn't do this, he shouldn't do that. And the end result was people voted for him. So I think Donald Trump is going to be Donald Trump, and he will do whatever he thinks is necessary to reach the people if he feels the news media is not being fair to him. So it's worked so far, and I don't know. It's a different time. We've never had a president tweeting before.
No, we haven't.
So is it just, you know, the nature of where we're at in this time? I don't know. I don't know. It's an interesting question, but I think between Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, he's going to have like 50 million followers.
He is.
And what better way to reach the people that you want to reach?
Well, I can understand that, you know, certainly as a candidate, it can get rough and ready out there. But do you think, Lynette, that a president should act differently from the way they act on the campaign trail?
Well, we've never had a president like Donald Trump before.
No.
And I think we continue to try and define what we want as what we've seen in the past. And I think people just have a hard time accepting that. You can't go by conventional wisdom here, because he does not fit any mold for anybody that came before him. And I think that was one of the hardest things to accept campaigning, when you finally realized he wasn't going to change. This was it. You accept him. And I think sometimes people just take every word he says too literally, where we kind of look at the big picture of what he's talking about as far as issues and not play on every syllable of every word.
Well, let me just quote one of those tweets, and I'll put this to both of you. We have about a minute or so before we have to say goodbye. Donald Trump did tweet on New Year's Day, Happy New Year's to all, including my many enemies who lost so badly. They just don't know what to do. And I guess the question is, what do you think, or what do you hope, to you, Lynette, Donald Trump does on Inauguration Day to bring the country together?
Well, again, I hope his speech will, and I expect it to totally be. He does welcome everybody. He wants to be the president for everybody. And he will reach out, whether people will accept him and work with him. You know, there's two sides here. You can only reach out so much, and I think he'll continue to do it, though. I don't see him ever turning away anybody that is willing to sit and talk to him.
Carolyn, I'm giving you the last word. You have 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, I really do believe he is a patriot, and that he has utilized the best and the brightest minds to heal and to unite America, and we're all going to go to stand under our Constitution. And as Lynette said, if people do not want to accept that, you know, that is up to them, but the opportunity will be there for them. And he is open to input. I was thrilled with the Twitter account, because I don't have to filter through, you know, somebody's opinion of what he said. There it is. I can see what he said and make my own decision.
Well, my thanks to both of you, Carolyn Bonkosky and Lynette Villano. Thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. Both Republican delegates to the GOP convention from the 17th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. And after this very short break, we'll be talking about Vice President-elect Mike Pence. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. While Donald Trump has been getting the headlines, his vice president-elect Mike Pence has been working behind the scenes, playing a key role in the transition team. And we asked Tom Lobianco to join us. He's politics reporter for CNN, covered Mike Pence in Indiana when he worked for the Washington Times, the Indiana Star, and also the Associated Press. And Tom Lobianco, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. So how much of Mike Pence's fingerprints do you see on the administration as it's coming together?
Well, you know, he's been very instrumental in some of the key picks. Right now, on Capitol Hill, Tom Price is delivering his testimony at his confirmation hearing. Of course, Tom Price, a representative and a colleague of Pence's when they were in the House together. Pence is credited with pushing him as the health nominee. Another key person at HHS is somebody who was actually instrumental in Indiana's alternative expansion of Medicaid. Her name is Seema Verma, and she had worked for both the governor before Pence, Mitch Daniels, and then worked for Pence. So, you know, he's become very influential. It's kind of interesting because there's this, like, unique space in Trump's world. A lot of times, a couple of us were talking about this yesterday. Classically, politicians come up and they have trusted advisors. They kind of have like a very small group. You have like your Barack Obama has like a David Axelrod, someone who was with him when he was not a nobody, but when he was ascending, you know, before the entire nation knew about him. Trump doesn't have that. So it's kind of created a free-for-all. And Pence, over the last 6 months, has successfully navigated his way to one of Trump's top advisors. As you said before, you can see that reflected in these big picks.
Well, you know what's so interesting, and this goes back a couple of weeks, but I think it maybe tells us something about Mike Pence and also Donald Trump. And this was in response to Hamilton, the musical Hamilton, when the cast addressed Pence, who was in the audience, or I guess about leaving the audience, having seen the play, the musical. Basically saying, you know, please uphold our American values. We're a diverse America. We're alarmed and we're anxious. And we want to make sure that you and Trump are working on behalf of all of us. And basically, Mike Pence says, I heard it, I wasn't offended, hats off to the cast. Whereas Trump says that Pence was being harassed by the cast, very rude and insulting. Does that tell us a little bit of something about these two men?
you know, it reminds me of the Obama anger translator skit.
Right.
You know, but it's like we've got it in reverse now, right? You've got Trump, there's you always know when he's angry. Pence has kind of become like the Trump translator, right? He's the kind of guy, look, he walks the line, right? Look at his response to the John Lewis dust-up, right? He did kind of politically the right thing. He said, look, he opens his statement, he opens his comments by saying John Wright's is a civil rights icon, period. And then he goes and delivers the Trump response as probably Trump should have said it, which is that he thought this was disrespectful. And he wished that the congressman wouldn't have said that, and he would like the congressman to attend the inauguration, which is just, you know, miles away from how Trump handled it.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's wild. None of us have ever seen anything like it.
Well, buckle your seatbelt. That's all I'm going to say there, Tom. But how would you describe Mike Pence's brand of conservatism? Because he is a very conservative as a governor and certainly as a former member of Congress.
Sure. Well, you know, he's kind of like the classic 1990s. He bridged when I was covering him and in Indiana. And a lot of people were talking about, okay, maybe he'll run for president in 2012. Well, obviously, he decided not to do that. And then there's a lot of chatter. Maybe he'll run for president in 2016. And there's a lot of inside the Beltway chatter about this. And the idea was, and his pitch, is that he checks off all the different classic conservative groups, right? He's a religious conservative. He's a social conservative. Those two are not always the same thing.
Right.
They're distinct brands.
Right.
And a fiscal conservative. All right. You know, he likes to compare himself to Reagan, et cetera, et cetera. You know, every capital C conservative in every way. That was always kind of the selling point, especially from his supporters who thought he would make a good president. And it's interesting now because look at he is opposing free trade because he's a part of the Trump administration and he has to oppose it. It would be incredibly strange to have a vice president support one thing that the president doesn't. So as central as that.
I was going to say, such as free trade. No, go ahead.
Yeah, well, and it's fascinating to watch this because, you know, Pence came up this way. Pence grew up an Irish Catholic Democrat. Right? His family came down from Chicago, moved down to central Indiana. He grew up in Columbus. Which is not a hayseed town. You know, a lot of folks don't know this, but Columbus is anchored by Cummins Engineering, in a very kind of a cosmopolitan little town down there in central Indiana. And grew up okay around there. Family, strong, classic Irish Catholic Democrats. And he had this conversion, sort of a religious conversion, when he went to college back in the mid-70s. And that started him on this path to being, and Reagan really kind of completed it. Reagan running in 76 and then again in 80, kind of completed Mike Pence, the conservative warrior. And he's a happy conservative warrior. You know, don't let the demeanor is smiles, polite, right? He's incredibly, just inexorably nice, and is not easily shaken, but also solidly conservative. There's no question about that. And that's what's so fascinating. I mean, for 40 years, he was like that. And now, coming into the White House, he's turning around on these key issues. I mean, free trade is not, it's not even orthodoxy. It's just not even questioned when it comes to conservatism.
Well, Tom, let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Tom Lobianco, and he's a politics reporter for CNN. talking about Mike Pence, Vice President-elect Mike Pence, and what he has been doing behind the scenes as the Trump team transitions to the White House. And you can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Tom, I do want to talk looking ahead, but I'm also curious about whether just how much Mike Pence's job as governor of Indiana was in jeopardy when he signed on with the Trump administration.
It was definitely in jeopardy. Now, there's been some reports out there from Republicans and Democrats that he was definitely going to lose that race. I do not think that is true. I suspect he would have eked it out. And, you know, had he not been selected for vice president, I think he still would have won that race, because look at how much the margins of victory for Trump and other Republicans in Indiana. And it was, you know, double digits. So I think he would have ended up being okay. He was definitely in jeopardy, though. There was blood in the water after he had that whole religious freedom, kind of the extension of the gay marriage battle back in 2015. After he had that, it was handled just so poorly by him and his staff that, you know, it looked like a state where, like, Indiana, solid red, could go Democrat for governor, which is stunning. It's a stunning concept. He was definitely in jeopardy back then. Of course, that changed.
Well, you mentioned Tom Price, and as you and I are talking, Tom LaBianca, I'm looking at my TV screen, and there he is at his confirmation hearing. There is a question. In fact, CNN, I believe, broke some of this story about some of the investments that he made and the questionable or the potential questionable timing of where he stood on legislation. What can you tell us about Tom Price?
Sure. Well, give a shout out here to my colleague, Manu Raju, our senior congressional correspondent, who broke that story a couple days ago. Tom Price, when he was a congressman, introduced legislation that would have helped out a maker of artificial knee and hip replacement maker named Zimmer Biomet. And it would have just delayed some rules regs, basically, that would have made sure that they kept on earning good profits. And turns out that one week before he introduced that legislation, he bought up to $15,000 worth of stock in that company. Now, you know, the Price people say that was not his purchase. It's that a broker who manages his investments bought that for him, and that he had no knowledge of it. But this kind of goes to the bigger question that we've seen with Trump himself, with so many of his cabinet nominees, of these ethical quandaries. Look, I can't tell you whether or not he did that thinking he was going to make money. You know, I don't know that. I can't reach inside his head. But I do know that it looks bad, and it breaks all sorts of classic ethics rules, I mean, which is why you have these in place to begin with. The incoming cabinet, Trump himself have had just incredible problems with this. You saw Jason Chaffetz, the House Oversight Chairman, a Republican from Utah, say that he wants to bring in the head of the Office of Government Ethics and grill him in private, because the Office of Government Ethics chief, Walter Schaub, questioned Trump on his plan to divest from his businesses. So it's indicative of the bigger story around this incoming administration.
Well, it's interesting watching Price and also talking about the Affordable Care Act. Now, Trump more recently talked about insurance for everyone. I'm not sure exactly how he is translating that. But you reported, Tom, about how this kind of blindsided the Republicans in Congress. They were going down another path, and then Donald Trump talks about insurance for everyone. Where does that leave this issue, and obviously such an important issue for the entire country?
Well, it's fascinating because it's up in the air. We honestly don't know. You know, the senators were coming back from a long weekend, and we all were asking them the same question. Do do you believe that Trump meant that he wants insurance for everybody, which is universal coverage is it just worlds apart from universal access, mm-hmm. which is what the Republicans want. And they don't, you know, Lamar Alexander, the chairman of the Senate Health Committee, which we see right here now, grilling Tom Price, said he kind of laughed and he very slyly, very subtly, he said, I don't know, I'm going to wait before I respond to that because maybe his comments will change.
Interesting. I mean, that you could go down the single payer road with a phrase like that. You know, it's interesting, and this is looking ahead, certainly how previous presidents, including George W. Bush, Barack Obama, how they empowered their vice presidents. And I'm going to ask you to put on your hat there, Tom, and look mm-hmm. into the future there. How do you see, then, Mike Pence as vice president?
I think he's going to have a significant amount of power, which, as the guy who covered him as governor, is just stunning to me because he was not a strong executive as governor. But, you know, the circumstances change. And the way it looks right now, granted, they haven't even taken office yet, but based on all indications, it looks like Trump might not be a strong executive. He might not be the guy. He's definitely not a details guy. He's not the guy who comes in and says, you know, I want single payer instead of universal access. He doesn't dig down into the details of legislation and policy. Pence could become that guy very easily. He's the one with relationships. He's the one who goes out there on the Hill in the Capitol as these things are being crafted. He understands all this stuff. It's fascinating. The circumstances almost force him into a powerful position.
Well, and I was reading some polls this week that Donald Trump comes in with lower approval ratings than Barack Obama did or George W. Bush did and other presidents as well. Do you think Mike Pence can either not just humanize him, but help to sort of raise those numbers for Donald Trump?
He could. Yeah, very easily. I mean, look, he's a great communicator. He's great at delivering the message. That was always one of his jobs when he was in the House of Representatives, you know, as a member of Republican leadership. He's always been good at that. I mean, look at the campaign. He always did an excellent job. Look at the vice president debate where he was the one who came off as cool and collected, and Tim Kaine looked like he was overreaching as he was trying to swing at him. You know, obviously both nice guys, all right? That's their image. That's kind of their brand of politics. But, you know, Pence came away stronger in that one. So I think that's another part of this job. I think that, you know, to explain to people, okay, maybe he didn't actually mean universal coverage when he said that. Maybe he means universal access, which could theoretically get you to universal coverage, to kind of massage what Trump is saying.
How different, and we're almost out of time here, Tom, how different is Washington, D.C. from Indiana?
Worlds apart. Although, you know, I love seeing my Hoosiers out here.
There are Hoosiers so out there.
Yeah. For all your listeners, there is no such thing as an Indianan. An Indianan does not exist. It's just Hoosier. Okay?
Okay. We learned something today. Tom, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. That's Tom Lobianco, and he covered the 2016 presidential race for CNN, and he also spent time covering Indiana as well. And that's it for today's edition of Radio Times, getting a flavor for what's ahead for President-elect Donald Trump and his vice president, also hearing from Trump supporters who live here in Pennsylvania. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thanks for joining us.